Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. My name is Gav Miffy and today I'm joined by the lovely
Joe Scribbles
and
Daniel Cooper.
Were you late coming in there because you were doing a video?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we do. Well, it's not a video podcast anymore, so chill your beans.
It's just behind the scenes,
twice a year.
But you can follow 2 plus 2 is Joe on Instagram because there might be something a bit he's just done on that.
Not for a bit.
What a lovely episode we've got coming up for you. I've written tease intro, but nothing else. We've got Travis Knight, the man who directed the new Bumblebee film, which you and I went to see. We've also got Brian Blessed.
That's absurd. You looked off as if Dale was the audience then. Yeah. You're so used to live podcasts now.
He's losing his shit. Also got Brian Blessed on the podcast.
That's a joke.
That's by a new mic.
Insane.
That's a good joke. I'm sorry I missed that.
That's right.
But also, just want to say a big thank you to everyone who came to our Prestige podcast. Last week we recorded it at the Rio Cinema in Dalston. It went down very, very well.
Genuinely one of the best things I've ever done.
Absolutely, yeah.
At this company.
It felt really wholesome.
Yeah.
As well. It felt really wholesome.
It was less grotty than there are other outputs now.
But it was a joke that became real in a very special way.
I said this to you the other day. Never underestimate the commitment of this team to really seeing a joke to its logical conclusion.
Yeah.
You see that with Spookulvich, Corona.
I thought you were going to say,
a lot of our output.
Never underestimate our commitment to seeing a joke through to its tedious conclusion. You'd be like,
The thing is, I don't find it tedious.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, Spookulvich and Prestige, that's a joke to the best point it could be. Mm. We've not done much more with it.
Yeah, because Waddington's didn't want it.
Yeah.
there was that bit in all of us, I think, after the Prestige, and it was like 300 something tickets sold. Like, just madness. I've got a video of like just looking at the audience, and it's just insane.
Cool. Yeah.
And you, for a second, you're like, we could do this every month.
Do this every day.
We could be millionaires.
Every day. Prestige every day.
I just love the idea of day four just going, oh, Christ. No one's here. It's us.
So when can you listen to that, Gav?
On from Christmas Day 2018.
Yes.
I've scheduled it all. It's all ready to go. It'll drop at 9:30 in the morning, GMT.
It's a slightly baffling audio experience, I imagine.
Yes, it is.
You should really have watched The Prestige very soon before listening to it.
Yes. And I mean, what would really help is if you were there on the day.
Yeah, that would be useful. Yeah.
But that's why it's an extra episode.
There's a lot of visual elements of it.
I basically say that the intro to it, I just be like, hello, thank you for downloading this. The sound is a bit shoddy, and a lot of it's not going to make any sense. But don't have a go, because you're not paying for it. Merry Christmas, also, one and all.
Also, I'm wearing a dinner suit and bow tie, isn't it?
It's fantastic.
No one really knew that.
We might have the official photos back by then.
Oh.
A lovely man called Tom DM'd me on Twitter and said, hey, do you want a photographer for the day? And he came down and photoed it.
Well, if that's the case, check out IGN UK's Twitter and our personal Twitter, and we'll sling them up there.
He took one picture of me.
Oh, fuck yeah.
That I know I'm going to use for the rest of my life. It's me on a balcony with a light behind my head pretending to be the great Danton.
I mean,
Jesus.
The good Lord willing, that will be the thumbnail for this podcast.
I would very much hope so.
There we go. So, thank you very much for coming down. Who knows what film we'll do next? There was talk of Inception, but I don't think any of us... I watched fucking Pretty Sure's Light. Last night, I watched it again.
I watched it the day before.
Yeah. Can't get enough of it. Maybe we'll just do the Prestige
it's
again.
It's really good.
Let's do the Prestige again.
Just once a year, we'll do a Prestige.
What yeah. film do we talk about, like, the second after that? Obviously, it's a low-down second.
Oh, as in, like, block. Which one
yeah,
on in Nolan's
thing?
Was
no, the, no, I mean, just
oh,
any film
we
on this
talk
yeah.
about.
Inception Jurassic was the one everyone keeps talking about.
Shattered Glass.
Yeah,
Shattered
Glass.
Shattered Glass is up there.
That is a harder sell.
It's a much harder sell. I can't see us doing 313 tickets for that one, lads.
Nah.
It is a good film. It'd be like that, though. You know, at the beginning of the Prestige one, we're like, hands up, who's never seen it before? And like, you know, a good like 30 people put it up. In this room, like, hands up, never seen it before. Entire the front row, which is yeah. all is there.
Well, and enjoy a brand new film. Enjoy a brand new film.
Fantastic. Croups, you and I went to watch in the, you know, that mad week where we watched all the films. We went to watch Bumblebee.
We did.
New Transformers film.
Brand new Transformers film. Transformers film.
Yeah.
And I was quite excited about this before we went to see it. I was quite excited after the first trailer, which I think is a really, really good trailer. And it's directed by a guy called Travis Knight. And people might not recognize his name, but he basically works at Leica Studios. So they made Coraline, Box Trolls, most recently Kubo and the Two Strings.
Oh.
And Kubo and the Two Strings is the first film he directed.
Yeah.
And it's incredible.
It's
like
a
people
banger.
People don't talk about it, but it is an exceptional animated movie that one really talks about.
Yeah, I watched it for the first time last month.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's absolutely brilliant. Like I wasn't prepared for quite how much of a fairy tale is.
Yes.
Like with fairy tale logic.
Very much.
Like some of it there are moments where you can see why it didn't do particularly well because it doesn't follow in a natural way except by like sort of dream logic. But just as coming to it as an adult, you're like, fuck it.
I wonder if like it's one of those films like didn't really like go mad at the cinema or recently, but in time might
people will come
create
to
a get
bit,
a following.
Yeah.
Like yeah.
It's a cloudy
I don't want to say Nightmare Before Christmas,
no,
but you
no,
know
no,
what
yeah.
I mean.
I was gonna say it's a cloudy with a chance of meatballs.
Yes, yeah. Like I think it's got such goodwill to like people who have seen it rave about it. So when he was announced as the director of Bumblebee, I was like, what an interesting choice. Because obviously this guy, you know, has chops, as you say in the film industry.
Yeah.
And it's cool to get an animator to do a film where the main character is animated.
Yeah.
And especially with all the other Transformer movies are just like, at this point, like noise.
Hmm.
They're going to have something that tries to be character driven. But when we sat down and watched it, like, it is good and it is definitely trying to do that other thing. And it's set in the 80s and it's like this school movie. It's just maybe not quite good because it's trying to like be like E.T. or Iron Giant and obviously those are incredibly high benchmarks but at least I think it's definitely trying to do something different and there are moments in it but it doesn't quite maybe live up to the things it's aspiring to be like which is hard.
Do you know what I think bodes well for it? I haven't seen Bumblebee yet but we did a video about Travis Knight looking at old Transformers designs and talking about the how they were implemented into this film, which, like, even without seeing it, I really enjoyed. And I have no attachment to Transformers at all.
Same
He's
here,
just great at speaking about it.
Yeah,
he's so clearly passionate.
But before we did that video, my hope was, he comes from, obviously, a design and animation background.
Yeah.
I would love to hear him talk about the Transformers using that view and that eye.
Yeah.
And he does that. And he's like, I love Transformers growing up.
Yeah.
And he just obviously gets like visual language and he talks about what makes Optimus Prime contrast to the other characters.
Yeah.
What makes the Decepticons all weirdly consistent and why you perceive them to be evil from a design perspective.
That's really
so it's really cool that he has that eye. But when we were watching it, and I think it's also it really suffered that we saw Spider-Verse very close to it as which I think you would say with any other film would suffer seeing that.
Absolutely,
because it's a similar tone where you're trying to do heartfelt and sincere and also really funny and flippant in the next scene and the next beat.
Yep.
And Spider-Verse's funny bits are way funnier and its heartfelt bits like hit home way more.
Mm.
And it's just,
I've talked like so many people like who genuinely love this film, man. Like friends of mine who love Transformers and actually quite enjoy the Transformers films as well, being like, this is, they're like more excited for this one than they were the first one. And they fucking like that film as well. So
I think it suffers a bit just because of all the recent Transformers movies.
Yeah.
See, even as someone who grew up loving them, like properly loving Transformers, as soon as like they still go back to the scenes where they're fighting, I do kind of tune out a bit.
Yeah. Well, this is what I was going to say.
Even though they're cooler designs, yeah, it's just, I don't know.
Before I got sidetracked earlier by myself, what I meant to say was the thing that bodes well is in that video.
Yeah.
And the comments to that video is just people sounding off. Like, comments are horrible on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's all people saying how much they love Travis Knight and how he's helping.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And if that's the message from proper Transformers fans,
yeah,
at this point, after a movie that doesn't quite get there, maybe he gets given the leeway to push more towards the heartfelt, interesting fan stuff.
Because at the beginning of this movie, there's a bit on Cybertron where he, like, in the video, he talks about it, like, being in the, what you're about to hear, like, it's him playing with his toys.
Yeah.
But he's doing it on the big screen and he gets to, like, pick any of his favorite characters.
That's cool.
Like, he's like something he wanted to play with, but yeah.
Yeah.
I think it also suffers from the fact that if there'd been like a 5-year gap.
Yeah.
Or this had been the very first Transformers, like, ooh, this could be the start of something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas I wish it just could have left it a bit more time.
Yeah.
Just so people, like, yeah.
Well, let's listen to the man himself talk about playing with his toys. This is Travis Knight, director of Bumblebee.
Obviously, you've worked on a bunch of animated movies at Leica. How do you go from that to doing one of these huge, big budget Transformers, like, franchise movies? How does that journey happen?
Yeah, it's a good question. I certainly don't think I'm the most obvious choice for something like that when you look at my background. I mean, I've largely worked on these handcrafted, artisanal, you know, animated films. You know, it was a surprise, as much a surprise for me as anybody else, when I got a call from Paramount and the producers of the film saying they wanted to talk to me about a new Transformers movie. It was never my wildest imaginations could I have imagined I'd be making a movie like that. And I thought, no, they get the wrong guy. They think I'm somebody else. And once I started to talk to them and realized that they wanted to take the franchise in a different direction, they wanted to focus in on something else. They wanted to essentially, you know, look at this massive, expansive mythology and tell a more, you know, a more small scale story about one of the characters. That got me excited because I thought that, you know, within this massive, expansive universe, you really could focus in a tiny corner of this campus and really get to know one of these characters in a way that we never have before. And also, I was a huge Transformers fan when I was a kid. I mean, I grew up with these things. Mm. So, you know, I remember watching the animated series. I remember playing
the toys.
So
how old were you when that was on?
I think I was around 9 years old. Okay. when the first one little mini series came on. And I remember think it was unlike anything I'd ever seen before. I thought it was just totally awesome.
So, like, when I was a kid, like, I was a huge Transformers fan, because we were just talking before you came in. Don't know if they do this in American schools, but I went to a school where they did a thing called Bring Your Toy to School Day.
Uh-huh.
And my mom always used to stress out. She's like, don't take anything with small parts. Don't right. take a board game. So I'd always take a Transformer.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought there were three coolest things in the world when I was a kid. Transformers, Ghostbusters, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay, yeah, those are all awesome.
I think that's the trinity for when you're... You know, born in the 80s.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you were always a Transformers fan.
Huge Transformers fan when I was a kid. And so when I started to think about, you know, my take on this movie, that's the feeling that I wanted to try to evoke, that the feeling of being introduced to the Transformers for the very first time, you know, presupposing no knowledge, like, they just come out of nowhere. And how did that make me feel? How would that make the audience feel if they're in a situation like that? And then how can we dive deeper into one of these characters and really get to know them in a meaningful way? And because essentially it's an origin story and we're talking about the origin of one of the Transformers, it made complete sense to set it in the era where the Transformers originated to begin with, which is the mid 80s.
Do you know, like, were they distinctly, like, particularly looking at people with animation backgrounds? Because obviously the lead character, well, one of the lead characters in this movie is obviously entirely animated.
Right.
Is that something you think they thought was more appropriate for the movie?
I certainly think it is appropriate and helpful. For me, I mean, that part of the filmmaking process on this movie was something that, it was very similar to the things I've been doing for the last 20 years. And so, you know, I had a very easy rapport with the special effects guys, the visual effects guys, and the animators. We had a shorthand. We could kind of immediately get to the point of what I was looking for the performance. So it was really easy to connect with those guys. And I think we were able to get a really beautiful performance because of that. But in terms of who else they'd been considering, you know, the only thing I know is just what I've seen in press reports, mm-hmm. and who knows how accurate that is. But in large measure, it didn't look like a lot of those cats had an animation in their background.
So would you say, compared to, obviously, a lot of these kind of franchise movies, superhero movies, have a lot of visual effects and animated characters. Do you think, were you probably way more involved in that process than the standard director with that non-animation background?
The only thing I can say is I can only tell you what I heard from my crew members, mm-hmm. which is because how do I know? I've never been, you know, I don't know what other directors, you know, knowledge is about this kind of stuff. But I remember my very first animator brief where I sat down and I talked to the crew and I just talked about the aesthetic that I was going for, the level of performance, and then started talking about, you know, animation principles and all this kind of thing, and silhouette and you know, ease-ins and follow-throughs and all the, you know, all the different animation stuff that you always discuss. And we got out of the session and my VFX supervisor goes, I've never heard an animator's brief like that before. I was like, what do you mean? And he goes, typically the director says, make it cooler. So I was like, oh, well, that's not what's going to happen here. We're going to dive into the marrow.
I bet all the animators have to be left just like sitting up going, oh, Christ.
Oh, Jesus. This a-hole. But it
was
great.
We're going to use the old bumblebee.
Right. But it was great, though, because it was like, you know, we could speak to each other as peers. You know, I've done this stuff before, too. I brought things to life with my hands, and that's what we were doing with that side of the film. And it was really important that, you know, the visual effects wasn't just about splashy spectacle. It needed to be about character. And because the animators, they're not just, you know, incredible visual effects artists, they're actors. Mm. And that's what we needed Bumblebee to be. He really needed to be an emotional creature. And if that didn't work, if he wasn't believable, if you didn't see that he had, you know, real hopes and dreams and emotions and everything else, the movie doesn't work. And I'm incredibly proud that the ILM team pulled it off.
Because I remember this phrase from a documentary I once watched about animation where someone said that animators are frustrated or shy actors and they kind of act through their creations. Because sometimes you see people with like mirrors on their desk to do facial reactions. Oh, yeah. And like, or I think there's a room at Pixar where you can go perform, record it, and then bring that footage back to your desk to
Absolutely,
watch.
Yeah. I mean, that's a standard thing where, you know, if you're going to somehow stylize reality, you need to understand reality. And so, you know, a lot of mirrors, that's looking at facial expressions, you know, studying how things actually move, acting things out, filming yourself, filming others, looking at reference. You know, that's something you do to try to, you know, basically understand, you know, kineticism, movement, mm-hmm. You know, posture, gesture, what all these things, these are all things that communicate an idea or an emotion or something. And so that's what animators are. They're essentially students of human behavior and human movement. And I don't know that I would say, you know, as an animator myself, I don't know that I'm a frustrated actor, but I do know that that is what an animator does. An animator is acting. They're acting through a puppet or through a pencil or through a, you know, keyboard and a mouse or through a stylus. They are bringing a performance to life in a different way than, say, a normal actor would, but that's what they're doing.
With that kind of mindset of like animation and movement, what did you, obviously, these started out as, you know, in cartoons, they've been on the big screen before. What did you have in mind coming to them? How did you want to bring the Transformers to life? What ideas did you bring to the project in that regard?
I think for me, it really came down to this, a relationship. It came down to a core relationship. Is that, you know, I knew that we were going to have spectacle. I knew that we were going to have, you know, sweet robot fisticuffs and high octane speed chases and all this kind of stuff. That's par for the course for an action adventure film like this. And I was excited to do all that stuff. It's fun. But really, you know, if you don't have grounded characters, if you don't have an emotional core that people can respond to, it's all just, you know, noise and fury. It's all just, you know, retina, you know, burning eye candy. It doesn't mean anything. And so I wanted to make sure that, you know, when our heroes were in peril, that it actually, it made a difference. You cared. You cared how, you know, how they, if they prevailed or if they failed. So for me, it came down to the core relationship between the girl and the robot. That was the essence of it. And, you know, for, you know, the fundamental story that why I wanted to tell is a film that's about love and empathy and about how a life-changing, life-affirming relationship can completely alter the trajectory of your existence. And that was at the core of this story with this guy and this girl. You know, they're essentially these funhouse mirror versions of each other, these broken souls who find each other, heal each other, make each other whole, and allow them to progress in their lives. And that was the core story that I wanted to tell.
Were there any other, because obviously the focus of this, of course, is on Bumblebee, and it's, mm-hmm. you're right, it's based on their relationship. How did you go about selecting the Decepticons to feature in the movie? Because obviously some you couldn't probably use because they featured in the other movies.
Yeah, I mean, because we set the film, you know, 2 decades prior to the events of the first Transformers film, the live action film that Michael directed, it did give us some liberty. You know, we could potentially, you know, use some characters from those later films. But we knew we wanted to keep the cast of characters smaller, that, you know, it was more intimate. It wasn't always just about kind of ratcheting it up the spectacle. It was about making sure that the spectacle mattered. So it's a smaller scale movie. But for the heavies, the antagonists, the ones he goes up against, you know, Bumblebee is a scout. He's a warrior. He's a badass, but he's small. His main thing always, but he's a scout. I mean, I think in kind of later years, he's come to be just this, you know, ferocious killing machine. But for me, he was always the guy he was the scout. He was the little guy that went out and, you know, he did reconnaissance and all this kind of stuff, and he could fight if he had to. But that wasn't really his main thing. And I wanted to go back to that idea that he is essentially the first, he's the scout. He's the first one who comes to Earth and to kind of suss things out, to figure it out, if this is a place where the Autobots can come and seek refuge from, you know, after their home has been devastated by this war on Cybertron. And so who could he go up against? Well, I mean, every single Transformer is essentially bigger than he is. So I knew that, you know, that it was going to, like, when you physically looked at them, that he was going to be, you know, his size, his stature, his power is going to pale in comparison to anything that we put him up against. But I wanted them to look just, you know, I wanted them to be angular because he's round. I wanted them to be angular and muscular and aggressive and just look ferocious just at a glance. And that's sort of an animator's thing. It's like you think about design, mm-hmm. you think about silhouette, you think about color palette. And I knew that we were going to have a lot of, you know, kinetic action stuff, a lot of, you know, crazy camera movements and fighting and whatnot. So I wanted to make sure that it was always very clear what the audience was looking at, that just by a glance, you know, okay, that's Dropkick, that's, you know, that's Shatter, that's Bumblebee, oh, you know, and there would never be any confusion what you're looking at when you're looking at these battle sequences. And so that started to determine the shapes, the color, and the design language. And then we essentially invented three Decepticons. They have, you know, I think some of them are kind of names that are pulled from old things, but that's not really the way we approach it. We approach them as characters, and then, you know, it's this whole thing, but
how many of those conversations do you have with, like, Hasbro, where it's like, well, this is this, and like, who, because I think people who like nerdy stuff like to think there's a person who knows. Like, for many years on Star Wars, there was a guy that maintained, like, the lore. Mm-hmm. Is there an equivalent with Transformers, or is it because is it a bit more fluid what you can do?
Certainly, I mean, there are people who are, you know, have encyclopedic knowledge of the Transformers, and I don't necessarily have encyclopedic knowledge, but I certainly have a ton of knowledge and familiarity with that first wave of Transformers because I was a kid and I loved them, and that's just burned into my you know, brain folds. But when I came aboard, you know, Hasbro Cats, they gave me this giant tome. It was like, you know, the mythology of Transformers. And I looked at this thing and I'm like, oh my God, what is this? And I started to go through it, and it was an incredible resource. But, you know, for me and the story that we were telling, I just went back to my own experiences, my own memories of these characters. Yeah, I mean, I think, look, you without question, you can look at the previous five films and know that the mythology is a little fluid. But I wanted to make sure that this film was self-contained, that it was its own thing, that it presupposes no knowledge of the Transformers coming into it. And so you can sit from beginning to end, watch it, have a good time. But for those people who are fans of both, you know, Michael's films and the earlier cartoons like I am, there's a lot of layers of fun stuff for them to enjoy.
Well, talking about being a fan of that original series and, you know, the scenes on Cybertron, which people have glimpsed in the trailers already, obviously must have been a lot of fun to do.
Oh,
because
God,
that is
so
like
fun.
The equivalent of being in a toy box.
So much
and getting
fun.
All your favorite characters and, you know, reenacting something.
That's really what it was. Yeah. You know, it was like I had an opportunity to do this thing. And it was like, oh my God, I'm gonna put everything I loved from the cartoon into this thing as much as I can, you know. But we had enough time and enough money. We just would have blown the whole thing out. That's not a whole movie in and of itself, I think. But I just put all my favorite Transformers in there as much as you can. I mean,
one you wanted to put in there that you couldn't?
Couldn't only because of time and budget. It's, you know, every single new Transformer is something that someone has to mm-hmm. design, has to build, has to rig, has to animate. And so, you know, they call them assets. Every new asset costs money. So there was a handful of other Transformers that I wanted to put in there, just couldn't because of the cost. But I got some of my favorites in there. I'm pretty happy with that.
Fantastic, Travis. This week we had two new trailers. We had Men in Black and Hellboy both drop within 24 hours of each other.
Yes.
I liked Men in Black and I thought Hellboy was okay.
Yeah, I'm in exactly the same boat as you.
Yeah,
I've seen some real vitriol towards Hellboy.
Really?
People are not liking it on Twitter.
Yeah, it's mad because it's probably booted off on our YouTube channel. Like, it's done like loads of views and stuff like that. Like, I liked some parts of it. I thought some parts of it is like slightly cheap. And actually, similar to how I felt in some ways about Bumblebee, is like the way that music is used is not in necessarily like clever way. It's more just like chucking it on, being like, oh, this is the feeling that we're going for.
How do
from
we make
this
it 1987?
Song. Exactly, yeah. And I felt like that sometimes in Bumblebee, but I definitely felt like that on the Hellboy trailer. I don't feel like that song is used, this, well, I can't remember what song it is now, but like, don't remember that the music in it is used in a very interesting way. It's literally just bogged on and going, there you go, have that. But it does have Big Mo Harris from EastEnders with a machine gun.
That is quite
in a chip shop.
Who has a very famous brother.
Yes.
Like, Gary Oldman's sister.
Gary
Oldman's
sister.
When you remember, I can remember where I was when JFK got shot. I can remember when I found out Big Mo was Gary Oldman's sister.
Well, I tweeted about it yesterday and people just going mental in my mentions. Like, some person going, oh, I can't believe she's Gary Oldman's sister. Other people's going, what? Like, this is mental.
It sounds like you're taking the piss.
It absolutely does, yeah. But yeah, no, I'm up for Hellboy. I'm kind of like, it looks slightly cheap, I thought.
There is one shot of like a mountain base or something that it looks like one of those like bootleg universe type like just YouTube short films. Like, it looks really, really bad.
Do you know what's really strange as well, right? I've watched it a couple of times now. Lots of the characters stand ridiculously close to each other. Like, if someone was standing that close to me and talking to me, I'd have to go, you've got to stand back a bit.
You've got an odd eye.
They were so close to each other.
Small sets.
Yeah.
Right, guys, if you shuffle in.
Yeah.
This is the only lens we've got.
Yeah, we got to use this for four different locations.
Whereas on Dunkirk, Lone's goes far as way as you can.
Yeah.
I'll get you all in.
But it's really strange. Watch the trailer again.
No.
Maybe I'm being mad. But it does feel like they are a little bit too close to each other. Like, a lot of times, like, I wouldn't be comfortable in that scene.
The thing that's odd to me is how close it feels like it's hewing to what those first two Hellboy movies were. Like,
yes.
I'm not familiar with the comic stuff particularly, so I don't have the point of references for where they're changing.
Yeah.
But so much of the dynamics that I'm seeing in that first trailer is, it's like, you know, everyone talks about Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man, what was the point?
Yeah.
They made like a real effort to change
absolutely
elements.
Yeah.
Like, there are moments in that where I just go, if this was performed by the old cast, it would make no difference at all. To
absolutely,
those original
movies.
Like, it's really strange.
Slight tangent on that. You know what's mad with those Amazing Spider-Man movies? For the second movie, when they just went back to the Tobey Maguire outfit.
Oh yeah.
But in the first one, it's completely different. He's got like built-in trainers.
Yeah.
And the second one was like, it's
also awesome.
Very strange.
Another tangent. The Tobey Maguire outfit got added to Spider-Man for free today as a surprise.
Yeah.
A, didn't realise that was something people had been asking for.
Yeah, people came
and also,
why do people care?
Yeah.
They're the worst bits of Spider-Man.
Also, you think something a bit disingenuous about it. You asked for it, so it's here.
Yeah.
So that's been planned since
day one.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
It's Christmas. Come on. Like, new DLC just came out.
I feel slightly left out. I don't have a tangent about Spider-Man.
You
so
what I will say is
on Wired, there's a really good like 30-minute video with Kevin Smith talking about every single Spider-Man. And if you like Kevin Smith, it is a really, really good video. So there you go.
That
I did have one.
Brilliant.
What are we talking about?
Hellboy.
You know.
That's what happens when you got free tangents, lads.
Oh, baby.
Yeah. I think the same thing, like, before you guys watched this morning, I was like, why is he just doing Ron Perlman's voice? Doesn't make any sense.
But apart from Abe Sapien, which is a big miss for me right now.
Yeah.
Also, how are you going to do it without Niles? But I just watch that and I go, I just don't know what new I'm getting out of this.
Because
if what you want out of Hellboy is some more blood, like, fuck off. I don't give a shit. I didn't need more gore.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's nothing, it's really nothing strange, doing for me.
But
well, I say that, Ian McShane.
Yeah.
Wicked.
Men in Black trailer also dropped.
Yes.
You really like this.
I just really like Men in Black. You know the running joke that I, because of Rush Hour, I like interracial buddy cop movies?
Yes.
You know Men in Black? Yeah. Like, Men in Black 1, it might be up there with my most watched ever movies. Like, ooh. I loved it so much as a kid.
Yeah.
And I've continued to love it. Like, wow. I've watched it this year.
Yeah.
Like,
have you?
I really, really like Men in Black. That's I think great. It's brilliant.
Have you ever been on the Men in Black ride?
No.
You get to shoot aliens.
Oh, come on. Why am I not being on that?
It's like that Toy Story. It's like you get a little gun, you shoot stuff.
Did you get to shoot Vincent D'Onofrio's character? And then it's like, sugar in water.
I've been on it with you.
You're up to it.
Have you?
Me and you went on that together, like a month ago.
Did I look like I was having a nice time?
I don't know.
That's weird.
Jesus.
Busy. Like, I'm just excited. I'm genuinely excited to see more. Because also that is a franchise that, I mean, really it went stagnant after the first movie.
Yeah.
I like three, but it's not brilliant.
I think having Josh Brolin in it is fucking brilliant. Yes. I just thought,
great casting.
I just thought, remember, at the time I was like, bang, I just started with Mad Men.
Oh,
and
right.
It's like a mad thing where you just go, that's how you do period, and how you don't do it is essentially Austin Powers, which is what is in Men in Black 3.
I like that you're comparing Men in Black 3 to Mad Men. You know what? I'd love to see Matthew Weiner's take on Mad Men.
Yeah,
that'd be incredible. But I'm just interested to see, maybe it's going to be shit, but I like the tone of this. It doesn't, it's not like just jettisoning what Men in Black was. It feels like the same place, the same universe, and it's two different people, and Chris Hemsworth is being Thor.
Yeah.
Like, that's just good. Like, everyone likes Thor. Just let him be him all the time.
In the trailer where he's holding a little hammer.
He throws a hammer.
Yeah.
Like, they know what they're doing.
I saw someone,
I'm fine with that.
I saw someone that I follow, like an American film journalist earlier, going, oh my God, like, OMG, is this a Thor reference? I'm dying. We're like, right, that's it. Shut up. You'll get unfollowed.
Oh, unfollowed.
Oh,
she's gone. Yeah, absolutely gone. Can't be arsed with that. Can't be dealing with it.
I'm just, I'm into
OMG.
It.
OMG.
Also, that bit where they're just pulling guns out of the car.
That's fantastic.
That's very Men in Black.
I'm big into it. Yeah, I think it's going to be good. Like you say, like, it feels like one of those, it feels like one of those series of films where you just go, you could just do this. You could do loads of this.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like, just the premise of there are international branches. Like, even if you didn't get Chris Hemsworth, I'm sure they'd want him to be a mainstay of the franchise, but you'd go, just get two prominent actors to be in another branch.
That's exactly
what I
think.
And that's the format.
Yeah.
Not like almost like an anthology. It's like, it's just a cool one-off thing to do.
I don't care that, you know, like, I like Tessa Thompson, I like Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
I'm not bothered about following those people like as actors through a series of films. I would love to watch a different buddy cop pairing in every film in a different
thing,
country.
Like, in a world where, like, in a, like, with films like everyone trying to do interconnected, it's a really good way of doing interconnected without putting writing yourself into corners.
Yeah.
Just go, the next one's just about a different thing set somewhere else.
And I do like how, because at first I was like, it's just like somebody else discovering Men in Black, because it has been quite a while since Men in Black 3.
Yeah, I think it'll be a whole generation, like my nephew will watch it, it will know, and probably not watch the original.
But I do like, for people like us who are like, well, I remember, especially you, like you remember the first Men in Black quite well. I don't need another, like, what are we type thing. Feels like with her, she's just like, she's like gone looking for them, found them, and just like it almost seems like a bit of a Men in Black like fangirl.
Yeah,
so she's like, now she's like, yes, she's like realizing a dream rather than being like, whoa, all these crazy aliens
like, she'll be in the know, you'll still be introducing people through her, but
absolutely,
it's not like, oh,
it's not going to be like
you
Men in Black,
the exact same scenes,
with
it's
Will
also
Smith.
A really simple premise, like, you can do that really quickly,
absolutely.
Also, I really like watching Chris Hemsworth do comedy,
yes,
I mean, he's just really funny, like, in the National have you seen the National Lampoon movie yet?
So good,
it is really good,
that film is really funny. Yeah.
I just just him.
Yeah, no, it's just generally.
I don't know why
it
didn't become like a little bit like Game Night. Like, it's really good.
Wow.
And I remember you and Al came back from San Francisco,
we both
watched it.
I was like, this is
I watched it on play and I was like, that's a lovely time doing that.
Shit. I would not even have turned it on.
Yeah. Surprisingly good. And he's brilliant in it.
Yeah, he is really
good. Like, he's got quite a small role, but he's very funny.
Same with Ghostbusters.
He's a very funny guy.
Like, I thought Ghostbusters was shite, but I thought he was amazing in it. But yeah, there you go. Men in Black and Hellboy trailers there. dissected.
Yeah.
Before your very ears.
Broken down.
So the other week we got a mad email, which was just this, like, subject heading capital letters. Do you want Brian Blessed on the podcast? And it's one of those things where obviously we were going to say yes.
Yeah. From Brian Blessed.
Yeah. Hello, B-Rye here. Obviously we're going to say yeah. What we never say yeah to really is taking a Skype audio feed and sticking on the podcast, because usually it's a bit shit. And, you know, we like, even though we talk about nonsense on here, we try and make it sound at least good, except for the Prestige podcast. Shut up. So we never say yeah to it really, but we thought, fuck it, it's Brian Blessed. Let's have a chat with him, see what he said. He is delightfully mad, which is exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
I kind of had, like, it's hard doing a Skype interview, but I had a little laugh and a joke with him. He probably swears more than I do.
Oh, which is a lot. For our international listeners,
yeah.
How well known is Brian Blessed outside Britain? Because if not, brace yourself.
Yeah. This is a at least late 70s man.
Yes.
Nice. Maybe early 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's essentially just famous for being loud.
Yeah.
Like, it's incredible.
But if you don't know who he is, go read up about him afterwards, because he is, like, an explorer as well.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Adventurer. He talks about this in The Thing.
Like, the things he's done with his life. He's an actor, like, principally. Well, that's what he became known for.
Yeah.
But he's, like, I think he was in the RSC and stuff.
Yeah.
But he's just a larger-than-life figure in Britain.
My favourite story about Brian Blessed, I don't know if he talks about this, I haven't heard the interview. He once saw a woman giving birth in Richmond Park and helped her give birth.
Oh, my God, I know that.
Pushed the clots out of her belly and then bit off the umbilical cord. Now,
like,
now,
again, you have to know what Brian Blessed looked like for that to be as delightfully mad as it is.
Obviously, he's the only person who's ever told this, but this is what I love about Brian Blessed, is he just will make shit up on the fly and doesn't care at all. He's amazing.
I didn't get a chance to bring this up in the podcast, but he... I actually met him once, because an ex-girlfriend of mine did Duke of Edinburgh, and she got the Gold Award, and you get to go to the
Explorers Guild.
You get to go, because you get to go meet Prince Philip, and he comes and says hello to you, and like gives them their fucking scout badges or whatever it was. But you also get a celebrity there as well, who like chat. So there was two groups on the day. One group was getting Katie Melua. One group was getting Brian Blessed.
Oh my God.
Now, how gutted would you be if you were in the group that got Melua? We got Blessed, even though I didn't do it. It was this mad bit as well, where he went round and said hello to all of the... He welcomes all the family and stuff into it. Went around and said hello to all of the Duke of Edinburgh Gold Award. And then I was sitting at the front row, because it was just me there from my girlfriend's family. And he came up to me and just went, "Why aren't you up here?" And I was like, and he's like, "You bloody well should. Come on, come here." And I was like, "No, I haven't done it." And then he made me go stand with all the people who just got the Duke of Edinburgh Gold Awards. And I was so embarrassed, because I was just like,
"How old are you?"
Well, like 22, something like that, by the time she got it. No, 20, maybe, something like that, by the time she got it. And it was so horrible. And I was like, I had to stand there for a bit until he went further down the line, and I just kind of like slunk away when I sat in my... It was so embarrassing. So this is Brian Blessed, who is in the new COD, COD Zombies mode. I can't think of anywhere more perfect for that man to be working / living. Here he is talking about that right now.
Right, here we go. Lovely. Well, it's nice to talk to you.
Yeah, how are you doing today? What have you been up to?
This today? Oh, doing lots of weights and exercises, because I'm always going on adventures. You know, I train all the time. I've finished all my space training in Moscow, and I've done 800 hours there, and a lot with NASA. I'm on the space program, etc. So that's astonishing for an actor in real life to be part of the space program. I train for mountains like Mount Everest. I'm always going on. 50% of my life is expeditions and 50% acting.
That's amazing. I mean, you can't just drop drop information like...
I'm always ready in case they want.
Yeah, you can't just drop information like NASA training into thing. What do you mean NASA training? What kind of stuff?
Oh, well, I completed training over there on Reunion Island.
Right.
Because they want to go to Mars, and we've been showing them me with lots of mountaineers wearing special suits They've been created by the man who created the outfit for Terminator.
Predator.
Predator.
Wait, so you're going to be wearing... like?
So we've been wearing this. A lot of training and things like that.
Yeah.
So I'm part of the space program. We have a space program in Britain.
Yeah.
At Abingdon.
Yeah.
And so anyway, there we are. That all sounds rather crazy.
To be fair, Brian, I can't think of anybody I'd rather meet Martians than you if we make contact.
Well, of course, when we go to Mars, there's a mountain there called Olympus Mons, and it's four times higher than Mount Everest.
Right.
And it's the size of Spain. We need to get out there. I think that, they talk about this and global warming, but we actually need to get out in space.
Yeah.
We've got to let the Earth rest a bit. We don't just belong here. We belong out there as well.
Absolutely.
Anyway, there, I'm talking quite wild to you.
No, it's fine. No worries. Every time we get somebody on the podcast, we ask them for their favorite movie, TV show, and video game. Do you have a favorite movie?
I think that... My favorite movie, I don't want to kind of depress you, etc., but my favorite movie is the Russian War and Peace.
Oh, okay.
They've done Wars and Peace, and we've done it in this country, and they're not bloody good.
Yeah.
They're pretty tame. But the Russian one that with Bondarchuk directed, he used the entire Red Army in it.
Yeah.
For the Red Army, for Napoleon's army, and for the Russian army. And it is sensational acting by the Russians.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. I've never seen a film like that. You've got to see it on the big screen.
Okay.
And the music and the power. I've never seen a film as powerful. So the Russian War and Peace.
Mm. I'm gonna check that out. It feels like one you definitely need to see in a cinema. Do you have a favorite?
You've got to see it.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite TV show?
Well, oddly enough, my favorite one is the one I actually starred in. My favorite one of all time is I, Claudius.
Okay.
And I played Augustus Caesar, the lead in it, with Derek Jacobi and Patrick Stewart and Sean Phillips and people like that.
Yeah.
And I, Claudius, won every award going. So I think that's the most satisfying. Because I've done more televisions and television serials than any other actor, from Z Cars to I, Claudius, to Long John Silver, to Blackbeard, you name it, to Tom Jones, and so forth. I've done more and more. But my favorite one that I've done, which has been adored, particularly in America, is I, Claudius.
Amazing. I always think that people always talk about people like, Richard Harris and Oliver Reed and Richard Burton as like these hellraisers. But I reckon in your time, you were probably a bit of a hellraiser.
I'm a hellraiser in the fact that I am in, as I said, 50% of my life is exploration and 50% acting.
Yeah.
So in actual fact, they act being hellraisers, but in actual fact, I live beyond that. After all three expeditions to Everest, having climbed Everest and Aconcagua and done the North Pole and climbed and reached the magnetic North Pole, how many people have done that? And so that I kind of, from the length and breadth of the world to the lost world in South America, I am the real McCoy. Whereas they acted, I am it. Oliver Reed and Richard Harris and O'Toole, as O'Toole would say, I was fucking Brian will eat us fucking alive. I'd have eaten the fuckers alive.
Yeah, amazing. You're voicing a character in the new Black Ops 4 zombie mode. What's that been like?
Well, I think that it is larger than life, of course. I just think it's an amazing character in the fact he's called General Jonathan Warwick. But it's known simply as the Brigadier.
Yeah.
And the kind of the dead of night is set in an opulent English mansion. And it's a proper gothic horror story.
Yeah.
And it's crammed to the brim with all manner of ghosts and what. Anyway, it's marvellous kind of acting, really, alongside people like Helen Bonham Carter and Kiefer Sutherland and Charles Dance. I do a lot of kind of voiceovers for all kinds of things, but everywhere I go, everywhere is universal. Everyone adores Call of Duty. Apparently, in a kind of class of its own.
Absolutely,
and the one we've done is absolutely bloody amazing. Oh, it's amazing. It's going to be very different.
Yeah.
Very powerful. You know, my character's very powerful. He fought in the Boer War and things like that.
Yeah.
So this new Black Ops Zombies adventure, Dead of the Night, I mean, it is really an astonishing part for me. My part requires more energy than Five King Lears. So the Brigadier is an astonishing character.
Yeah.
It defies description. He's fought, he's a veteran of the Boer War. He fought in the Boer Wars.
Yeah.
He's a true hero of the British Empire. He's a bit older than everybody else, but he's eccentric, archaic, and he's got a tremendous sense of humour.
Yeah, and you're such
the
a big.
Zombies don't have a chance.
You're such a big character. How do you make
I employ all my technique as a Shakespearean actor
for Black Ops 4
vocally, but it's not easy. You get actors and think, oh, it's quite easy to do, but doing Call of Duty is. It's hugely demanding.
Yeah.
But I'm experienced in life. I can kind of be immensely colourful and over the top. But to get it into a performance with your voice, and I have a voice that goes from tenor to baritone to bass baritone with ease. And so I find the whole thing a great challenge.
Yeah.
I've actually adored doing it. It's been a real whiz, I've adored it.
Ah, that's amazing. If zombies came real tomorrow, what would be your plan?
Well, if they were alive?
Yeah.
Say that again?
So if zombies became a thing tomorrow, if tomorrow on the news they were like, right, zombies are attacking London, what would be your plan?
Well, my plan is because I did national service in the RAF in my youth at 18 to 20, 21 years of age. And my favourite gun was the Bren gun. I was fucking good with it. The Bren gun is the best gun ever invented for a soldier.
Yeah.
Mag on, chase about, locking pin. Amazing. I'd use the Bren gun. It would blast fucking zombies apart.
Yeah.
En masse. One just charge of a Bren gun could kill 1,000 zombies.
Yeah.
I would take with me 2 bottles of holy water to sprinkle on them to make them dissolve.
Well, if zombies attack me, I'm giving you a call straight away.
Give me a call, and I'll come in with my Bren gun, and I'll bring some holy water, and I'll make them dissolve. just put a big cross in front of you and tell them to fuck off.
I'll do that. You've got quite a luxurious beard. I'm trying to grow one myself. Like, have you got any tips for beard care?
Any tips for a beard?
Yeah.
Well, apparently you've got a very good beard, I can see. And so, but I... I do shampoo it a lot.
Okay.
But I use baby shampoo.
Right.
Which really makes it curly and bushy. I've got a huge beard, but it's quite a delicate beard. It's quite soft. So I shampoo it regularly.
Yeah.
And comb it into position. I think every man should have a beard.
Me too.
We're born with a bloody beard.
Yeah.
And some people say, well, I can't grow a beard. Well, gradually, just train it. You'll gradually get it all over your face. I mean, my beard, of course, I mean, I get on very well with gorillas and things like that. And people think when I'm in the Himalayas, the Sherpas all say I'm a Yeti.
Yeah.
Brian, you are a Yeti. They call me a Yeti. Sasquatch, Bigfoot. But my beard, in actual fact, if I let it grow, actually grows up to my eyes.
Yeah.
So I am actually the naked ape. I am a gorilla. I am definitely. They did it. A census on the Yeti a few weeks ago. All the experts and scientists.
Really?
And they're doing Bigfoots and Sasquatch and Betama. They came to the conclusion that the only Yeti in the world was Brian Blessed.
We're big fans of Star Wars, and we loved you as Boss Nass. Obviously, they're making new Star Wars films. If they wanted to make a Boss Nass one, would you be up for it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
They've got to bring him back. He's such a colour. What was marvellous is that in The Phantom Menace, he's the hero.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's him and his people, his Gungans, he's the king of the Gungans.
Yeah.
They defeat the dark side, don't they?
Absolutely.
And at the end, he receives the globe of peace.
Yeah.
And now that last line, I remember I went into a studio after many months of filming it, and the director, and George Lucas, took me in a studio and said, I want you to record the last word of the film. And it was, peace! And I thought, God, I've got the last word. And he said, you're the bloody hero of the film, Brian. You're the hero of the It was wonderful to do.
Yeah. And just finally, something we ask everyone that comes on the podcast. Have you seen Christopher Nolan's film, The Prestige, and did you like it?
Have I seen Christopher Nolan's
film, The Prestige?
I haven't seen it, have I? Everyone's telling me about it. I'm looking forward to it.
It's a good Christmas film.
I mean, everyone loves it. Yeah. Do you love it?
Yeah, I absolutely love it. Yeah, I think you'll like it as well.
I'm dying to see it. Christ, I'm dying to see it. Brilliant. I love films. I know I'm going to love it.
Okay, as long as you promise me you'll watch it over Christmas then. You promise me you'll watch it over Christmas?
Watch over Christmas?
Will you promise me you'll watch The Prestige over Christmas?
I bloody will. Promise.
All right, brilliant. Thank you very much for talking to me, Brian. Have a good day.
Lots of love.
Cheers. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Joe! Borderlands VR.
Yes.
Hit me.
Played it.
Yes. I watched you.
It's... Yeah, you walked... I love that, because you walked in, and I was facing the wrong way in the room.
And you hadn't realised you were facing the wrong way?
Not at all.
That's fucking witchcraft. Shut it down.
It's... Borderlands VR is a really weird thing. I don't... It feels like it's someone's passion project.
Yeah.
I'm assuming Randy Pitchford's.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason for it to exist. Mm. Like, it's an old game. It was never designed for VR, so it's required, like...
It's not a standalone experience.
It is the full game.
No, it's a full game in VR.
It is the whole of Borderlands.
I thought it was a bit of a laugh.
Yeah.
We're sure this is all actual facts now that we're saying, right?
None of that. And it's... I don't understand why it exists.
Yeah.
Like, it's so strange. And that is not to say it's bad.
No.
I did, whilst playing it, I was like, this feels a bit weird. There's loads of, like, movement controls, and I found my sweet spot with it quite early. Like, teleporting most of the time, but when I'm fighting, I could move around, like, I was using a controller.
Yeah.
I was moving around, like, a little bit.
Okay.
So it felt a bit like basic movement, two spaces.
Yeah.
I was doing without any possibility of nausea.
Yeah.
And then fine adjustments to fight. I was moving around as a walking thing.
That makes sense.
Does fuck with your head a bit.
Yeah.
After I finished, I felt quite bad for a little bit. Like, as soon as I took it off, which was weird. But that's my own fault, really.
Is the game easier? Because, like, that's quite an intense game to be playing if you're fixed to the spot.
Do you know
what's
mad?
There's a lot of stuff going on in Borderlands constantly.
Like, but if you can't move and your enemy can, that's quite an advantage they have.
I'm sure it's different with move controllers. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to try that.
Yeah.
With a standard controller, the way you shoot is by just looking at stuff and then pressing the trigger.
Ooh.
So, like, the crosshair's right in the middle of your vision.
So it's almost easier to aim.
It's harder.
Yeah.
Because you're not used to... There's something about how used you are to moving with analog controllers. And obviously, if it's move controllers, that's just your hands. You get hand-eye coordination. That's like, they've got a name for it. moving your face to shoot stuff feels really wrong because you're not in the game... You expect your gun to move somehow.
Yes.
Jesus. I've got no hand-eye coordination. That's why I didn't use the move controllers.
He just punched his own mic.
My microphone about. So I was trying to shoot people, but I was looking at them when actually I'm trying to lead my shot. So what I need to be doing is looking slightly to their right
so
when they're
I actually found it not... I actually found it quite natural when I played in Resident Evil 7, but that's probably because it's very different. Like, it's, you know, there's one thing in front of you, and it's like you're just looking to the head rather than something like, you know what I mean, all around you.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, the one, also as well, I feel like the PSVR, whilst it's not, like, mad cumbersome, it's not the lightest of thing to have on your head, man. Like, I found myself, like...
so chunky as
I found myself getting headaches a little bit when in a couple of Astrobot levels when you've really got to move your head.
But also, that thing, like, the way it goes on your head, like, other ones have straps.
Yes.
It just sits tight. Like, you literally have a band on your head.
Squeezing your head.
It's very weird.
But I remember, like, playing Eve Gunjack, I think it was called. And that was the one that, not Valkyrie, which is, like, the mad, actually, like proper
space
game.
Combat thing,
Like, Gunjack was, like, basically a really, really stripped-down version of that. Mm. Way, way more fun.
Yeah.
But it was on, what was the Samsung one?
Oh, Gear.
Yes.
No, is that Samsung Gear?
Yeah. So it was on that. Google. And basically, like, it was really fun because you is a the button was on the side of your thing.
Yes.
So you're basically like Cyclops in it. Yeah. And you move your head around and then, but you're not, you're still having to press something to shoot, even though like it's obviously moving your entire thing very quickly rather than like, as you say, if you're going for a couple of things, you've got to lead your shot. You need to look a little, you can't just be looking at the person, you've still got to do it. Whereas looking at a massive spaceship and going, is actually quite satisfying.
Was that at the Boston Studios event? Well, that we went to years and years ago?
Possibly, yeah.
So that was the first time I ever played VR.
Yeah.
And my 8-year relationship ended that night.
Did it? Because you went, I've seen the future.
I've seen the future and it's not you. Not in it.
I've got a photo of us.
I wish it was that simple.
That was such a cool thing, simple. Man. Like, actually, you went to one. I remember seeing you at one.
Bossa, yeah.
Yeah. So
that's when we didn't know each other.
Yeah, Bossa Studios, the guys who made like Surgeon Sim, a bunch of other games.
I am bread.
That cat dating sim. Like, oh, I think, well, he works for them. Yeah,
that night I played one in VR where you were in like a Grecian maze.
Yeah.
And one of you was like a Gorgon.
One. That was
Minotaur. Minotaur made more sense.
I think that was Spilt Milk who did other good games.
Yes.
It's like an asymmetrical thing where the person on the TV can see the entire maze. Yeah. Or,
oh, that was really good.
Maybe the way around.
Yeah, I love that one.
But the Boston Studios just do this amazing thing where they just invite people who are into VR. This is fucking years ago, man.
This is
like
when it was
5-6 years ago.
Original prototype Oculus.
First Oculus. And they would just invite developers and like sometimes it was like people in marketing and like just tech people who were interested in VR to come and give little talks. And then a bunch of other people then would be there showcasing their games. And the best thing about it was like, I didn't have an Oculus at the time, but the best thing about it is like the people there would just give you the game on like a if you've got a USB. Yeah, you can just have this game that I've just developed.
Because it was all prototypes. Like there was no market for VR. Like,
absolutely, yeah.
Emerging technology. You need people just be making stuff, finding stuff out. And
it's really exciting.
I think the night we went is when there was that mad guy there who was probably incredibly successful and rich now. But he was going on about the Spider-Man 2 game, about the swinging, and he was like, oh, yeah, it's like the best thing ever. And he's like, and then he made a VR game in that was swinging, and everyone put it on and immediately took it off and was just like, don't make games.
Yeah.
Like, this is poison. You've poisoned me.
You've made digital poison.
Because everyone felt disgusted straight after it. And they were just like, it's a bit weird that one.
I thought you were going to say, and this guy was like, you should make more Spider-Man games. Spider-Man games. Like, so were you working on for an hour? He's like, I just applied for a job at Insomniac.
Yeah.
And there's no way that guy works here.
He was like, it's all in VR.
Yeah. I should say, my positive point with regard to Borderlands VR...
Fantastic.
..is that it reminds me that what I... the things I've really loved in VR, mostly...
Yeah.
Apart from a couple of very, very good games, they're just good because they are good.
Yeah.
People try so hard to make realistic stuff in VR, and I don't know why they do it, because being in Borderlands...
Yeah.
...is so fucking cool because you're in a cartoon world. Like, that's what VR is for me. It's not really like trying to make an amazing place around me.
Because also, from that perspective, you can more easily go, well, this is not real.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because it...
Well, it has to be lower res.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas like being in Borderlands, I'm just walking, like teleporting around, just being like, this
Holy
looks
shit, yeah.
so cool. And all these people look interesting. And like, it's just... better.
That's one of my favorite stuff, like all VR stuff, like the plays with like scale and perspective.
Yes. Absolutely,
like Astrobot does, or where you're like, you're a little mouse and you're like, this is cool because you're literally transforming the way I perceive the world.
Yeah. Or like,
rather than I'm just...
Or your interaction.
In everyday life. Or everyday life, every fucking day,
in
mate.
In VR.
Unless it's Matrix good.
Yeah.
Unless the stake is better.
Yeah.
I'm not going in, guys.
With the Minotaur maze thing, like... The thing that's beautiful about that is how it interacts with the real world.
Yeah.
Like, you're in a virtual world where other people have more information than you.
Yeah.
So, like, my favorite VR game is Static, which is a game that's all about the fact that you have a controller, but you can't see it. So it does things with what your controller's doing that you can't see in the game. It's amazing.
I'm surprised there's not been more games that take advantage of, like, one person wearing the headset and other people being able to use the TV.
Keep talking, nobody explodes. Incredible.
Yeah.
Like, that's, like... I know they're pushing VR, like PlayStation VR, really hard.
Yeah.
Do a Christmas mini game collection where there's one person who always has to wear the headset.
Yeah. And then your whole family does, like, stuff around you.
Because it's that one where, like, someone's the cat.
Incredible. Yeah.
Oh, like, I haven't seen that.
So everyone's the mice on the TV because there has to be more than one mouse.
Yeah, everyone's the mice. And then there's a massive cat. Yeah.
And so you're the cat and you have to, like, are they hiding under cups? It's like a good few years
since I played it. Yeah.
So you've got to, like, run around and stay still when the cat's going to look, but you don't know when the cat's going to look.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's like
more of those.
It's a similar thing to, like, Nintendo Land. Like,
yes, oh, is it?
In the God, same thing. Like,
I love Nintendo Land
so
much.
It's so good, man. Like, basically, if you're listening and you make VR games, just make a Nintendo Land.
I should just,
like, but just change it.
They're not going to Sackboy anymore. You didn't do anything for them.
Yeah.
About nine people.
They should release Super Mario Chase on Switch.
Oh, my God. That was so good.
Like, just do that with 20 stages and more characters. I love that game.
What was the...
The Luigi's Mansion one's incredible.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Those were the two best ones.
But also, Tank, that fucking Kong mode. How much do we play that? We fucking loved that.
Went mad for Tank. I remember thinking, like, this has changed the game.
Yeah.
I went to Namco's offices. I was like, this is it. We found the system seller.
He's like tearing up. Yeah. Do that.
You've done it, guys.
There we are then. Borderlands VR. Good. Not great.
Yep. Just like, mixed bag.
But I mean, I feel like if you've spent money on a PSVR, you should buy that because it's
a full game.
Full
you don't
game
get many of those.
No.
Yeah. Tell you what, you say you don't get full games. We got full game on this very podcast.
Bloody hell.
Little game I had to call Keyword Countdown. Keyword Countdown. Time for Keyword Countdown. It's Keyword If you don't know what Keyword Countdown is, IMDb categorized their films via a bunch of crazy keywords. What I've done, or what someone I've forgotten his name has done, is picked 5 films, 10 keywords apiece. You guys have to guess what the film is and what the link is. And while you're guessing, I'm going to look up what his name is because this is a banger.
Can I just say, there's a bit of jeopardy here.
Yeah.
If I win...
Yes.
I'm keeping Krupa's hat that I've been wearing for this entire podcast.
Oh, no.
As you were doing that
if
bit
I
of
win,
riffing.
You have to wear this for your dinner tonight.
Oh, shit.
I'm up for that. So Krupa's holding his hand.
If we can agree to that.
No.
Oh, come
your
on,
hat
your
back.
Fridge.
Fridge. I'm going to a romantic dinner. I'm not wearing a cowboy.
But how much better would it be if you went to it like that?
Krupa's holding his hand, just for people who can't see, a ill-fitting cowboy hat.
Anna, it's our last night together before you head home for Christmas.
Good evening, sir.
Please do this.
I'd like to taste your Japanese barbecue.
Okay. while we were riffing like no one's business.
All right,
then.
Do it.
Yes, yeah, so you're doing it?
Yeah.
Fantastic. So winner of this.
I will take a picture if I do it.
If Joe wins, he gets Krupa's lovely beanie. If Krupa wins, Joe's got to go to his romantic dinner. The last time he's going to see his girlfriend for ages.
Yeah.
Wearing an ill-fitting cowboy hat. One which you'll see him wearing during the unofficial preview videos.
Yes, when you will know the hat if you've seen him.
So this keyword kind of was actually set in by Sean Hannan, who's very, very good. Film number one. Nasty Neighbor.
Bad Neighbors.
Bad Neighbors. Bad Neighbors 2.
The Burbs.
Finger Gun.
Gran Torino.
Yes!
Oh.
I reckon if I hadn't said Finger, you could have got that in the first one.
I was about to say it because you mentioned it during the movies podcast. You've undone yourself, Beanie Boy!
Oh, that's a big one out of the
gate,
isn't
it? That is big, isn't it?
9 Fuck. Points, that is. Gang, teenager, strong female character, home invasion, rape victim.
That's a good film.
Old man.
I wish I hadn't said that, just have you said rape victim.
Bad timing.
Fuck it. Old man, ex-veteran, Ford Torino. Here we go, film number 2. Shot in the head.
You're to blame.
JFK.
Fire.
Firestarter.
Total Recall.
Dog.
Dark Knight.
Dog. Mimic.
Recovering alcoholic.
I Am Legend.
Lethal Weapon.
Urinating on a painting.
That's a very specific clue.
I feel like I know what this is.
In Bruges.
Ireland.
The Island. Seven Psychopaths.
The Guard?
Child Abuse.
It's not The Guard.
Doubt?
Philomena?
Child Abuse?
Murder.
I thought it was a comedy.
Taken?
Confessional.
Christ. Calvary.
Yes.
Oh, I've not seen that.
Well done. Two points to Joe.
That is a film that is billed as a dark comedy. A lot more dark than comedy.
It's just
in that
dark,
one.
Yeah.
I've watched it twice because the second time I was like, everyone says it's brilliant.
Yeah.
I can't find it so
I didn't like The Guard. Everyone's gone on about that.
Oh, I like The Guard.
Shite, yeah. 2 points to Joe there. Final clue, priest. So Joe is currently sitting on 11
really
points.
Annoying because I said doubt really early on. You know if you say child abuse, think of priests.
Yeah.
Shortcut.
Yeah.
It's the only thing...
I'm really annoyed you've raced ahead.
I know.
I really would have loved to have seen you win.
Wait.
It's all to play for.
That's hasty, but also, I know that I'm on the loop.
Absolutely.
Side everyone wants to see Lee Stick.
I was looking for a new hat today.
Because, I mean, realistically, I'm not stealing his hat.
No. I would let you have it. That is the rules of the game.
All right, here we go.
You better not have nits.
I really like that. Like, I'm also wearing a hat for this podcast, but as a person doing it, I've got... nothing to lose, everything to gain. Although, to be fair, you keep an eye. Although I get to see you in a sweet hat, he looks sweet in it as well.
Exactly. So. It doesn't make a difference to your life, really.
Yeah, it doesn't. Here we go. Film number three. Based on a novel.
Jane Eyre. The Invisible Man.
Blade Runner.
Gav, give me a second.
Shh.
I know a lot of novels.
Small Town.
Midwich Cuckoos.
Black Cop.
It's The Guard.
Mississippi
Burning. It's not Three Billboards because that's Missouri.
No, it's not, yeah.
Justice.
Is it Matthew McConaughey?
It's not To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, what's that film called?
Revenge.
Killer Joe. Damn it.
No, it's...
Sexual Assault.
Is it The Grisham?
Runaway Jury.
Racial Discrimination.
What's it called?
I don't even know what it is.
Is the one with Spacey as well?
Trial.
Yeah.
Stop giving it away.
Mate, everyone's in this film. Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah, of course it fucking is. I literally can't think of what it's called.
Based on a novel. Small Town. Black Cop. Mississippi. Justice. Revenge. Sexual Assault. Racial Discrimination. Trial. Ku Klux Klan. A Time to Kill.
Oh, bloody hell.
Never knew it.
It's a fucking bang.
It's a really good film. That is actually a really good film. It's the best Grisham adaptation.
Sandra Bullock, Matthew McConaughey, Donald Sutherland, Kiefer Sutherland.
Hello.
Kevin Spacey. I couldn't tell you, actually. Mm. Right. Oh, Samuel Jackson is in there.
That's a good film, isn't it?
It's a brilliant film, aye. Here we go. Film number four. 1980s.
Brazil.
Ready Player One.
Fired from the job.
It's not Office
Space. Ferris Bueller.
Violence.
Falling Down. That's not easy.
History of Violence.
Mobile Phone. Whoa. Machismo.
Wall Street?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
You look
so unhappy. No, sorry.
Sorry, everyone. I'm absolutely
really
fucked
sorry.
This.
6 points to Joe there. The other one's Bad Guy.
My ship guy just goes, but it's all on the link.
Bad Guy, I mean, stocks, greed, capitalism, insider training. Insider training.
do all my own training.
To be fair, now and again, I do the thing where it's like, it is on the link, but I feel like when it's actually something on the line.
He's absolutely steamed ahead as well.
Yeah, he's on...
I know.
17 points.
It's impossible.
I can't believe I ruined this.
It's all right. It's okay. You've ruined it by being great, so it's fine.
I can remember the name of the one film that I recognised.
Film number five. Malaysia.
Oh,
The Beach.
How many films are set in Malaysia?
Conspiracy.
Oh,
ooh.
No.
Rival.
It's not God Forgives.
That's
Thailand.
That's Snowden movie. That's Hong Kong.
Retirement.
I think Malaysia's throwing us off.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. All these first five, to be fair. Child Labour.
If it's Jurassic Park, we'd be pissed.
Child Labour?
Yeah.
Metal Gear Solid.
Written and directed by cast member.
Gone Baby Gone.
Comedic sex scene.
Oh, that's a very different film.
Yeah, I know.
Changing gears there.
Comedic sex scene.
Brainwashing.
The President of Zoolander.
Yeah.
I've actually never seen Zoolander.
Have you? Oh, I haven't seen the second one, but the first one's banging. Yeah,
genuinely, the first one is a very funny movie.
For some reason in my head, I don't think it is. Like,
No, it's fantastic.
Dead Bowie's in it.
Surname as title, male model. So that is 20 points to Joe.
It's amazing. As soon as you said comedic sex scene, that wasn't what reminded me. I was like, what's a comedy that mentions Malaysia? And it's just someone saying, the President of Malaysia.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Here we go then. What is the link? So we got Gran Torino, Calvary, A Time to Kill, Wall Street, and Zoolander.
What a mad list.
And do you know what? You could get this from what I've said. Not as in what I've said in the key
countdowns.
Yeah. You can get this from when I've just told you these.
I know what it is.
Do you?
It's films with father and son actors. It
absolutely is, mate.
Yes!
Well done, mate. So, Gran Torino.
That's Clint Eastwood and the other one.
Scott Eastwood. Calvary.
That's Brendan and Donald Gleeson.
Yeah. Time to Kill, which is the one I said.
Dunno.
Sutherland.
Oh, yeah, Steve Sutherland. That's how I got it.
Wall Street. Charlie
Sheens.
And Mine.
Sheens.
Zoolander.
Jerry and Ben Stiller.
Yeah. Joe.
Who's Jerry Stiller? Has he been in
Jerry Stiller,
he's in Seinfeld.
Yeah, you'd know him. Oh. He's a weird looking little man.
Yeah, yeah. He's in loads of stuff, yeah.
I was about to do Zoolander quotes from him and I was like, oh, you haven't seen it?
Yeah. 21 well done, points, Joe.
I absolutely bottled it.
Steam, damn it. When is Hall on the line, the boy turns up.
I haven't done that well for a long time.
Sean Hannan, that's one of my favourite links we've ever been sent in.
Brilliant. And we very rarely get a link, so I'm happy with that.
Really, really good. Well done, everyone. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Remember, there is a Prestige special going live on the 25th. If you don't like your family, or if you do like your family, if you don't like them, you can listen to it. If you do like them, you can listen to it and go, hey, listen to this.
If you really don't, if you really don't like them, make them listen to it.
Yeah.
But skip the intro.
Yeah. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Sweet dreams.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.